Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning and welcome again to another episode of Atlanta Legal Experts. This is Emily Rowell. I'm your host with Peachtree Offices and Atlanta Legal Experts Radio Show. I have Ryan McPherson here with me today, producing and co-hosting today.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Me too. It's a bit of a snowy, wintry mix out there, but yeah. We all in the studio here, warm and cozy, ready for some hot legal talk.
And I'm so glad that everybody made it safely. It kind of reminded me of my favorite Bon Jovi album on the way here.
Slippery When Wet?
Yes. I was wondering if anybody was going to get that.
Okay.
So today we actually have a great topic that we'll be talking about, transitioning from a large firm to a small practice. And we have some exciting guests in the studio today. We have Maya Simmons Rogers with Simmons Rogers LLC. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And she works on small businesses in her practice.
That's correct.
And we have Michael Walensky with Slater & Walensky, LLC. He is a personal injury attorney.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And we also have Tiffany Simmons with Simmons Law. And she's got some great announcements today she's going to talk about.
Yes.
I'll let everybody, you know, wait.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have Ann Tyler Hall with Hall Benefits Law. Thank you for coming back. And both Tiffany and Ann Tyler have been on the show before.
My pleasure.
Yes.
Nice to be back.
She's with Hall Benefits Law, and she works with employee benefits and specifically the ERISA law. So we're excited to hear about that. So we'll just go ahead and cut to the chase.
Yeah, ready to get started.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm excited. So we're going to start with Maya Simmons Rogers. She is the managing partner of Simmons Rogers LLC. She attended Florida A&M University and interned with several Fortune 500 companies, including Southern Company, Georgia Power, Procter & Gamble, and Ernst & Young during her tenure. After graduating from Florida A&M with both her undergraduate and graduate degrees, Ms. Rogers moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to attend law school. During law school, Ms. Rogers was very active on campus and served in several elected and appointed leadership positions. While attending the University of Michigan Law School, Mrs. Rogers also had the opportunity to extern with South African Human Rights Commission in Cape Town. Following her externship, Ms. Rogers went to work in the ERISA litigation group at Alston & Byrd LLP. During her time at Alston & Byrd, Ms. Rogers gained extensive experience representing numerous Fortune 500 employers and defending large national insurance companies against claims for denied health, disability, and life insurance benefits. And she's also very, very involved with her community. She does a lot of pro bono legal services. And she is a native of Albany, Georgia, and relocated to Atlanta, Georgia to practice law. She believes deeply that practicing law is a way for her to help people and to help make the world a better place. And you can also see her entire bio and all her information on our website at AtlantaLegalExperts.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we'll talk a little bit about you first. And tell us a little more about your practice.
Okay. Well, the way that my practice is kind of set up, the firm in general, is that we are a civil law firm. And so unlike a lot of traditional small firms where you have one specific area, we do a broad range of services. We like to position ourselves as outside general counsel for our business clients mm-hmm. and kind of a first stop for our individual clients. And if we can't help you, then we direct you to or associate counsel who can.
Gotcha. So you have a team of people that you work with.
That's correct.
That's fantastic. So you really can help anybody that comes to your firm.
Yes, because like I said, even if we don't do it, right. I know enough people to say, okay, that's not something that I can handle, but I can refer you to someone or associate someone who can.
That's wonderful. So tell me a little bit more about the outside counsel. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So what I like to do for a lot of small and mid-sized businesses who don't need or can't afford to have full-time attorneys on staff mm-hmm. is to kind of provide that general counsel service so they can call and say, hey, this is the issue that we're having. Can we run this by you? Can you draft this contract? Can you review this for us? And also, the benefit of having done litigation is we're being sued. Can you litigate this for us as well?
Right, right. So they don't need necessarily an attorney on staff at all times.
Right.
They obviously can't afford it because they're a small business.
That's exactly right.
But then they can get your help and expertise.
Yep, and so I can do it. You know, I have different options. Some people just want to do as they go, as they need, and other people want to do a monthly flat rate. And we kind of have it as a package deal where they always have a certain amount of time they can get per month.
That's really nice. That way they don't, you know, if you bill by the hour, if you have a flat rate, that's really nice because then you can feel comfortable calling you.
Right, and I
time.
Have to worry about it. Exactly.
Right, right. I kind of relate to that. It's like if I need to call my attorney, I'm like, it's $500 as soon as I pick up the phone.
It makes you think twice.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really great. So let me ask you a little bit about this. You also do estate planning for businesses. So tell me a little bit more about that. Why would a business do estate planning?
I think sometimes as entrepreneurs, we get so focused on, you know, growing my business right here, right now. We never sit down to think, you know, what if something happened to me? What is the legacy of my business? Is my business something that I want to end when I'm no longer capable of running it? You know, what if I don't have time to groom somebody? What is my exit strategy and my plan? And I think as lawyers, we take it for granted because, you know, insurance and the bar rules require us to have a backup. Mm-hmm. But a lot of other businesses, that's just not required. So they don't think
right.
about it. And so you just want to help people think through, okay, even if I don't want my business to carry on, how do I want my business assets to be distributed? Because sometimes it's not just I want it to go to my kids. Sometimes people have other ideas of what they would like to happen to their business if they actually sit down and think about it.
And if they do want it to continue and they want to retire, that's a whole nother set of planning.
Exactly.
So then they would plan for their retirement, but then also have people trained.
Yep. So you can, it's, you know, plan for your retirement. Even if it's not retirement, sometimes it helps people realize, hey, I want to sell this business, and trying to work to get their business to a point where they can sell it and that somebody would want to purchase it. Or even saying, you know, hey, I have a partner. I'm interested in my partner owning, being the majority share, but I'd like my family to have some interest. And how can we structure it so that my business partner doesn't necessarily have to answer to my family members, but my family members can get the residual income.
That makes sense. And so you actually probably work with the individuals on their estate planning as well. Is that true?
I do. So sometimes what I find with my business clients, is especially small entrepreneurs, is that once they get to a law firm, they really want you to kind of be there for everything. And so that's kind of what I like to be able to do, is to say, hey, you know, in addition to planning for your business, let's make sure your personal assets are tucked in too. Because sometimes as a small business owner, your personal and your business are so interrelated that it all needs to be part of one plan.
I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. That's really important. And everybody feel free to pitch in if you need to while you're while we're talking. Did
yeah.
you have a question?
Yeah, I was just curious. When did you make that transition from such a large law firm and then start your own practice?
So it was kind of not a direct path. I practiced at Austin and Byrd for my first 3 years, and then through advice and guidance of talking to a lot of people, I kind of got the understanding that, you know, unless I wanted to be an ERISA litigation expert, then I needed to kind of transition between years 3 and 5, because if not, then nobody would be willing to train me to do anything else, and nobody would expect me to do anything else. And so I actually went to a smaller law firm first, where they did both litigation and business, and they were open to letting me do litigation and business. Because when I went to law school, I just always saw myself as being a business lawyer. Mm-hmm. But when I started practicing, it was, we really need you to do litigation. So
right.
I learned the litigation part and learned to love it, but I still had the business as my focus and my heart always.
And how long have you been on your own now?
This is my second year.
Second year,
yes.
And you're loving that. What do you like best about doing that?
A couple of things. One, I like the flexibility in my practice in being able to do the things that I'm interested in doing. That's one of the things that, you know, happens in a big law firm, is that you have to choose a practice group. Mm-hmm. And so you're practice becomes very narrow and very focused, which is great in some respects, but I do like the flexibility of being able to have a broader practice. And the second thing is that I love the relationships I'm able to build with my clients because you get to know them on a much more personal basis, right. And they become like your family members. So, you know little things about them, and you can go out and do things with them on a personal level and just build a different type of relationship than you can, I think, sometimes as an associate at a large practice.
Yeah, so every case is personal to you. You get to know the client on a personal level, and you're really fully invested in everything you work on, as opposed to that larger firm where it may just be another case, another set of paperwork that you've got to do. So,
right, or just, you know, I'm doing a piece of that motion or a piece of that brief, mm-hmm. versus I'm doing the whole thing, and if we're going out of town, we're probably going to ride together, and we're going to talk all the way there. We're going to talk all the way back. You know, you just it's much more hands-on.
That's good. That's good. And is your law firm a traditional boutique firm? You can do all everything in-house there? Or I think you mentioned a little bit before, but what are some of the more specific things that you do there?
So we kind of try to house everything under four major groups, and again, that would be our business law, which is the focus, and the estate planning, which are the two biggest parts of our practice, mm-hmm. and then we do some family and some personal injury, but that's mostly coupled in with our clients that we already have in-house. Just from doing the insurance defense on the insurance side, I got a little bit of a taste of that, and I know how it works.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. I mean, do you have any other staff members helping you out over there?
I do. I have one other attorney, and then, you know, good support staff.
Good support staff. That's always important.
Absolutely. That makes a big difference.
Yes.
Well, it was great to hear from you today, and we're going to go ahead and ask you how our listeners can reach you.
Well, perfect. They can reach me on my website at www.simmonsrogerslaw.com, and that's R-O-G-E-R-S, no D. And you can also find me by searching for simmonsrogerslaw.com on LinkedIn or Facebook.
Awesome.
You can always call me at 404-445-8260.
And it doesn't mean you have to be quiet for the rest of the time here. We're going to have the open forum discussion later on in the show.
I did have one more question. Where are you located, and what areas do you service?
So we are located in the Cumberland Mall area in the Riverwood Building, which is right across from Sam Ash, mm-hmm. if you're familiar with that area. And I do the entire state of Georgia. I'm from South Georgia. I get a lot of business from down there, so have car, will travel.
Excellent. All right. Glad to have that. All right.
Especially this morning. And just to remind our listeners, our actual sponsors today are Peachtree Offices and 3A Law Practice Management. And you can find their information on the website as well, AtlantaLegalExperts.com. So now we are going to turn to Michael Walensky. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Good morning. And he is with Slater and Walensky, a personal injury law firm. With over 40 years of combined legal experience, Michael Walensky of Slater and Walensky, using their knowledge, skill, and worth ethic, have helped thousands of injury victims and injury victims' families obtain settlements and verdicts. Michael Walensky is recognized as an experienced and committed advocate and litigator by insurance companies, defense attorneys, and judges. He has been continuously recognized by Georgia Trend Magazine as a Georgia legal elite. And something special is going on today. Can you tell us real quickly?
This morning or today is my first daughter's. It's her first birthday.
So happy birthday.
Great, fun morning.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
We took a lot of pictures and had some laughs. The party was this past weekend. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
So it's not this weekend. It was last weekend.
Yeah, it was this past weekend. Yeah,
fantastic.
Great. Yeah.
I'm so glad. And thanks for coming on such an important day. We really appreciate it. So tell me a little more about what areas of law you specialize in.
Well, personal injury is a very general term, and we see a lot of things on TV. But to break it down, my firm handles wrongful death, catastrophic injury that can occur through motor vehicle collision, tractor trailer, motorcycle, pedestrian, and also on premises such as slip and falls you hear about. You know, but had a case at one of the main manufacturers here in Georgia, but he was in line as a customer and a large piece of wood fell on his head. I had another one at a hotel where there was stairs that under the legal term is not readily apparent, and she didn't see them, and she fell down and broke her leg and her nose. So any injury anywhere is what we cover.
You represent the injured person.
Yes, we represent the injured victims, yes.
Awesome. And how long have you been with the firm?
I joined Slater & Walensky 4.5 years. Well, it turned into Slater & Walensky 4.5 years ago.
Awesome. And what actually made you become a lawyer?
It's a funny story. University of Georgia, went to Go Dogs, and I was a broadcast news major, and when I graduated there, I got an anchor job in Montana, way up north, and I'm from here, I'm from Sandy Springs, at a very low pay, and so it was either that, working at Smoothie King, or going to law school, and I made the decision to go to law school.
Smart.
And I always wanted to be a litigator. I loved the movie My Cousin Vinny, and it worked
kind
out
of remind
well.
Me of Ralph Macchio.
Oh, my haircut, I got it 2 days ago. I told her to take a little off. She took a lot. So.
It looks good, though.
Thank you.
And it's funny because I always think of My Cousin Vinny while I'm on this show. Isn't that terrible? Because it's probably the worst thing to relate. But that's funny that you said that. So are you a general practice, but you're more focused on personal injury, right?
Yeah, we're focused. Yeah.
So tell me, what's your advice on being a general practice versus a niche
well,
practice?
It matters, I would say, now after hearing Maya, it's your background and expertise. For me coming out, people advise, you know, start out maybe in a couple areas and see which one actually, you know, one sense you get more clients or what you want to focus on, what you enjoy, and really learn that law. Mm-hmm. It sounds like all of Maya's have a connection. So, you know, business is business and business law, they all interrelate. But for certain areas like medical malpractice or product liability or the personal injury side that I handle, which is motor vehicle collision, premises matter, case law is changing every month. You know, new cases are coming out. The standards are changing and all things are changing. So it's good to focus and be very specific on those areas.
So you can be a student of that area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And concentrate on that. And it makes you more of an expert as well. Mm-hmm. But you're right about having other people along with your, you know, that help you and support you that you can refer people
yes,
to.
Yes, yes. And just like Maya, it's great to have anybody, you know, that's an attorney because they can tell you somebody around you who doesn't handle something that you handle.
So tell me, what's a good day for you, except for the birthday?
Meaning?
In your practice, what would be a good day?
Making money.
Well, a good day is when the client's happy, you know. Because I don't do advertising and I don't do anything like that, my goal is to do the best for my clients so when they leave, they know I was trustworthy, I did a great job, and I made them happy. That way, they will speak out and tell other people about me. So really, a good day is when the client is happy. And every case has a different value. There's so many different reasons why. Mm-hmm. Just because your medical damages are the same, there's so many other things that could change the value of your case. So making the client happy is most important.
And could tell me if an attorney should join groups that practice in the same areas of law or different areas of law as far as, you know, trying to network and get their...
Yeah. So one thing I found in the personal injury world, when I first came out, I joined a lot of personal injury groups. Yeah. And, you know, when everybody does the same area of law, they're not referring out because if they get a case, it's their case. So I really started focusing on joining criminal law groups or business law groups or even family law because mm-hmm. they're not handling that. And that way I have somebody to refer to and they have somebody to refer to. And that really works out as a good team. And although we're all small firms, it turns into being a big firm atmosphere because you're a phone call or internet click away.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that happens here a lot too, just naturally, because they have different people in different practices.
That's
here.
Right. Yeah, and going back just a moment to, you know, where you said went to law school, where did you go, and then what was your first job once you got out of law school?
So I went to University of Maryland School of Law while I was there during my third year, because I thought I was going to become a solicitor, which is the same thing as a district attorney. I actually, while I was there my third year, did two externships, one with the Baltimore Public Defender. So if anybody's ever seen The Wire, it actually...
Oh, yeah, good show.
They actually did mimic the Baltimore experience very well, being in the jail cells, meeting the clients, going to court. It actually is very interesting. And then I also did under the Third Year Practice Act, which they also have in Georgia, but I was in front of the Court of Special Appeals, a three-judge panel. I handled a appeal of a criminal verdict. My client was in a maximum security prison, and I dealt with that whole appeal through the brief and the oral argument from the three-judge panel. But after law school, I started out because it was the market had crashed at that time and there were no state jobs, meaning district attorney solicitor jobs opening, that I started out in a creditor bankruptcy and collections firm where I handled all of their litigation, whether it was in bankruptcy or state court work. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 1 year, but then I switched down to Macon, Georgia. There's an amazing attorney named Catherine MacArthur who handles very large cases, and I had the opportunity to work with her, and that's how I got into the personal injury
world. So you returned back to Georgia, back to your roots to get involved with personal injury and yes. that sort of thing. So one question I've always had about personal injury and the nature of it, is someone always at fault when someone is injured? Is there someone you can always pin blame on, or are there truly just accidents out there?
Right. So I call them car collisions, not car accidents, because when you're in a vehicle, it's very hard to hit somebody else, I think, and not be negligent. But where... And tell me if you disagree, if you think, but where this comes into play is more in the premises matter. So if you get injured in a parking lot or in a store, mm-hmm. it comes down under the law of superior knowledge. Who would have had or should have had superior knowledge? You as the person going on the premises or the owner of the premises. So just like a day like today, there's extreme case law in Georgia that if you walk in a store and slip and you knew it was wet outside, you know, if you're within a certain threshold of the building, well, you should have known. So you can get injured on people's premises in a certain way and there is no negligence.
Right.
But And actually, so going back to the cars, and there is one example, a day like today, if you're driving this breed limb, being careful, and you hit a piece of ice, or you do hide your plane because you weren't going over the speed limit, then that's considered an act of God, and nobody is negligent.
Right.
So there's minimal examples.
Yeah, and there's a lot of unknown out there. So would you advise someone, if they do get injured, to at least seek out your advice to figure out if they can pursue a case like that?
Yeah, not only to pursue the case, but also just one thing I do is when people call me, just to advise them on, you know, what they should be telling, whether it's their insurance company or the other insurance company. What contractual rights do they have to talk to theirs or the other insurance company? And definitely to understand their rights and if they have a case, or just what is going to happen in the future, what questions are going to be asked of you, what forms are you going to fill out, whether it's with an attorney or not.
Yeah, and which route to take to get, you know, everything lined up. So perhaps if they, you know, they, there is some sort of settlement, you know, they still need to get the advice of a good attorney like you.
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I was going to say, because whenever I'd get in an accident, my insurance company would say, call me first, you know, and after being on the show for a while, the very first thing that I've learned is not to call them first.
Right.
Call your lawyer.
Call
the
lawyer.
I have a really good example of that. A person called me, a lawyer friend called me, asked me could I help their client. And she said the city had been doing some construction work and she fell. And so I asked her how long it go, and it had been more than 6 months. So I started to be concerned. And she had actually negotiated it herself for a while and told them she fell on a pebble.
Oh.
And I was like, well, falling on a pebble isn't negligence.
No.
So right. If that's your argument, there's no way that I or anybody else can go back and correct that for you and make it right and seem legitimate if you've made that a written statement.
Yeah. Anyway, going along with that is what she slipped. It's the wording you're using, because obviously the insurance companies, everything is recording what you're saying. So to one person, a small hole could be 6 feet deep. You know, the person lives by a canyon. So it's also the wording you're using when you're being taped or interviewed or filling out forms. That's very important.
That's
so keep
why
your
it's important to get the lawyer early, because if you come to us in the 11th hour, you know, we have to stick with what you've told them, unfortunately. And sometimes it can be to your detriment.
Right. Well, thank you, Michael, for being on the show today. And we're going to hear from you in just a little bit as well on our Hot Topic discussion. If you'll let our listeners know how they can reach you.
Michael Walensky of Slater Walensky. Our website is www.ga-legalteam.com. I'm personally, I'm a personal attorney. You can speak to me. We do have a team, but you can have my cell phone, 404-790-0808. And I'm also on Instagram, Michael_Walensky, W-I-L-E-N-S-K-Y.
And where are your offices located and what areas do you cover?
Thank you. Our office is in Colony Square in Midtown. And we are a Georgia statewide attorney. I am actually on two cases in Florida, but in a sense, we're national. Because once again, if I can't help you with your case, I can find you the best attorney in a different state. But I have cases as south as Albany and as north as the border, really. So
the whole entire state, you're centrally located here in town, Midtown area, Atlanta area.
Physically, yes.
Yeah, very good. All right.
You can only be in one place at one time. Okay, awesome. And just to remind our listeners, we are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts, and you can see all of the bios of all the guests online at atlantalegalexperts.com. It is snowing beautifully out, and it's just so nice to see. Hopefully we won't get trapped here like we did last year. And also our sponsors today are Peachtree Offices. You can see their website and all the information at peachtreeoffices.com, and they actually have a brand new website that they just launched, so they're really excited about that. And also 3A Law Practice Management, and they help attorneys or lawyers start and build their practice, and you can also find their information on atlantalegalexperts.com. So we are going to go to Tiffany Simmons with Simmons Law, and she is a returning guest. Thank you so much for coming back.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here in the new year.
Yes. And we've got a lot of announcements for you. Tiffany Simmons is an attorney and media personality dedicated to being a relentless advocate for her community. She is a managing partner at Simmons Law, a law firm in Atlanta, Georgia, which focuses on criminal defense, business law, and entertainment. She represents celebrities, businesses, and the everyday citizen. Most recently, she successfully secured acquittals in the trial and multiple retrials of Lula Smart and the Quitman 12. a group of minority political activists unfairly accused of voter fraud in the Brooks County, Georgia election in late 2013. Tiffany was also a part of the litigation team for a case that appeared on CNBC's American Greed, a weekly true crime television documentary series. Simmons has been honored with the Client Distinction Award in both 2013 and 14 from Martindale Hubbell for being in the top 1% of her profession. That's huge.
Thank you.
1%.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job. So I'm going to have to get right to it. Tell me about this case, this Quitman 12 case.
Well, we are happy to announce that we earned a full acquittal of our client, Ms. Lula Smart. She was one of the original 12 that was charged with, in layman's terms, we'll say voter fraud, but the two official charges were illegal possessions of ballots and interference with a voter. Ms. Smart, she faced 33 felony counts. I believe 24 of them actually went to the jury. Prior to that, we got those dismissed. And we received a full acquittal.
Wow.
We received news probably about 2 months ago that the prosecutors will not seek to try the remaining defendants. So we're very, very happy with that result.
And this is a long time coming.
Yes, we've had this case for about 5 years. It started off with myself, lead attorney Shaveen King out of Albany, and who's also my uncle, but great attorney. And then also attorney Carla Walker. So between myself, attorney King, and attorney Walker, it was over 50 years of experience combined.
Right.
In the last trial, it was just myself and attorney King.
Okay, yeah. So tell us about the latest trial. I know that there was 3 trials total. If you can tell me a little bit more about this latest recent trial.
Well, in the latest retrial, again, that was the one that we went through the full trial. We earned the full acquittal on all of the counts. And the trial actually lasted 5 weeks. The two prior mistrials probably last maybe a week and a half or so. But, yeah, the trial was 5 weeks long.
Wow.
It was my longest trial ever. You would think that it was a murder trial.
Wow. Yeah.
For how intense it was.
Right. Wow. So I can imagine your thoughts and feelings when you're going into it and it's still going and it's still going and it's still going. What are you thinking?
It was a test of endurance. Being an attorney and a young attorney, just having that experience, it was amazing, to be honest. It reminded me of a mental boxing match. So when I looked at it as, you know, a boxing match, I said, hey, we're just in round one. We're just in round two. So as we got to the end of the trial in week 5, I was okay because I endured, you know, that time frame. So it was definitely a test of endurance.
Sure. And it's actually trained you now for even more.
Yes.
So, you know, they always say it's hard to go through that, but then you come out better on the other side.
Yes. I definitely enjoyed the experience. I mean, even working with the senior judge, McCorvey, on this last retrial, it was a great experience to learn and just to be around that opportunity. It was awesome.
That's great.
And my question is going towards the voter suppression and any thoughts you may have on that and how it relates to that case.
Okay. Well, my brief thoughts are voter suppression is real. It's not just someone blocking you from voting the day of. There are methods just as we've seen in this case. A little background on the case. Before my clients won this school board election, and it's not a national election, so imagine the resources the prosecuting attorney's counsel put into this after 3 trials. Imagine the resources we had to extend, and we're very thankful for the support of the community and Quitman, because a lot of the community members, they wanted to see this resolved. But like I was saying, before my clients won, the makeup of the school board, it was majority white. Mm. After my clients won, that makeup changed to black. Mm. And some of the people, they didn't like that. So the theme of our case, it revolved around retaliation. It revolved around sour grapes. And, you know, the campaign that they ran was a successful absentee ballot campaign. A lot of the state's witnesses, they came on the stand, they said, hey, after this, I probably won't even vote anymore because this was a hassle. The GBI came to my house. They embarrassed me. They told me I would be arrested. They threatened me, all because I chose to vote. Mm-hmm. So my thoughts, you know, to wrap it up is voter suppression is real. And there are ways that, you know, people try to intimidate you not to go and exercise your vote.
So a little more details about that case. Did you find that it was all spearheaded, this voter suppression, by one person or a couple of people? I mean, who was really behind this whole thing here?
It was a group of people. Okay. And that group of people, again, were tied to the people who lost. Mm-hmm. And it was unfortunate to see elected officials a part of this. It was unfortunate mm-hmm. to see employees of the government a part of this. At this point, we'll say a conspiracy, because the prosecution, their response was, we're going to drop these charges. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough evidence, you know, to convict.
Yeah. So you guys brought some big city justice down there to that small town, it sounds
We did. I came along, and I won't take all the credit again. Lead Attorney King, he does a phenomenal job as it relates to civil rights, mm-hmm. and that probably comes from his dad, the late C.B. King Sr. So I won't take all the credit, but I'm thankful to be a part of that team.
Oh, yeah, we're thankful to have folks like you out there fighting for the little folks and making sure they're that is getting done out there, even if it is in a small town. And
I mean, I appreciated everything, and I was so grateful to see my client be able to let this go. I mean, imagine carrying this scarlet letter around a town where you grew up, a town where everyone knows you, a town where your family owned businesses. You know, it was a lot. So to see the relief when we heard that acquittal, it was amazing. And that's what
do they
makes
get any
it,
compensation out of that going forward? Or what, I mean, what do they, other than this, this fact that, you know, they got justice, what, you know, how do they get, other than, you know, what do they get in the long run?
We all wish for compensation when you face challenges in life. there are some options that they're looking at, but it's not a thing where, you know, the state is going to come and say, hey, we ruined your life.
Right.
Let's give you some money.
Right. And they probably still want to stay in that town, and they want to continue to be part of the community. And, you know, but you don't want to be walking around and say, hey, there's the person that caused this mess.
To give you a little bit more background, Ms. Smart, she has a background in criminal justice. She wanted to pursue, you know, that background, but this case is something that held her up. And now, you know, seeing how she was treated in the justice system, who knows, you know, what
she's going to do.
Exactly.
Well, we certainly wish the best of luck, and you know, hopefully everything continues to go good down there in that case and for her personally as well.
I'm sure you have a friend for life, for sure.
Yes. I mean, the family, they took great care of us. I mean, we all worked well as a team, so I would like to thank them publicly. One of the persons that were accused, Ms. Dennard, she worked with us as our legal assistant throughout the duration, so we definitely want to give her thanks, because, you know, being a defendant and also being as hands-on as she was, you know, it was a David and Goliath moment for us.
That is awesome. Now tell us a little bit about where you are located, and what, obviously you serve areas all over Georgia.
Yes, I do serve areas all over Georgia, and actually nationwide, because I do have business clients in other places. I also travel with some of my entertainment clients. This past weekend, we were in Alabama. So I love to do that. We are located in Colony Square, actually in the same suite along with Slater and Walensky. We are in Suite 1100 in Colony Square.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And tell our listeners how they can reach you.
They can reach Simmons Law and myself at our website. That's slfirmllc.com. They can reach me by my cell phone, because I am accessible. A lot of times smaller firms, maybe, you know, they look at us as, oh, can we contend with larger firms? Of course, lawyers win cases, not big buildings. So if you would like to reach me personally, you can give me a call on my cell phone. That's 404-461-8422. They can send an email at info@slfirmllc.com.
Awesome.
I see you're also here on Twitter. I want to mention that. I am Simmons Law.
Yes.
And also _ Tiffany Simmons. Yes. So make sure you follow her there. And also on Instagram, Tiffany M. Simmons.
Yes.
So look her up there. And also Facebook, all over social media, Tiffany Michelle Simmons and Simmons Law on the social media. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for having me.
All right.
And thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. And we've got Ann Tyler Hall. And now we have a new announcement for Ms. Hall as well, but I'll go ahead and read her bio. Ann Tyler Hall is the founder of Hall Benefits Law. Prior to forming Hall Benefits Law, Ann Tyler practiced ERISA and employee benefits law with Alston & Byrd as well. And King & Spalding LLP, two of Atlanta's largest law firms. She earned a Master of Law in Taxation with distinction from Georgetown University Law Center and her Juris Doctor from the University of Alabama School of Law. Ann Tyler earned a Master of Science in International Development from the University of Bath. She earned a Bachelor of Science in Finance and Economics, magna cum laude, from Birmingham Southern College. Wow, that's a lot.
I became a professional student for a while.
Yes, yes, that's easy to do. I'm going to hang out here for a while.
Right, right.
It's so great to have you back.
It's great to be here.
And you have some announcements as well. We've got everybody that's got some announcements
yes,
today.
Yes, I got married about 6 months ago. Wow. And so
congratulations.
Very exciting. A little later in life, I think my family was singing the Hallelujah chorus, but it happened nonetheless. And so very exciting. And so I transitioned from Ann Tyler Hamby to Ann Tyler Hall. And my law firm transitioned from Hamby Benefits Law to Hall Benefits Law. Mm-hmm. So still HBL, still the same initials, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is nice. Yeah, I had the same initials too. I didn't have to change my signature that much. And so you're rebranding.
Yes.
And I even saw you, you know, getting your pictures done. And
yes. Yeah.
It's super exciting to start anew.
It is. And I am enjoying Peachtree Offices.
So. Oh, thank you. Yes. You have a new location as well.
Yes. I moved over from Piedmont Road to Peachtree Offices a few months ago and loving being here.
Awesome. And we love having you for sure. So let's go ahead and ask you a little bit about how long have you practiced in a large law firm?
I started my law career with Alston & Byrd. I was there for 4 years, and then King & Spalding in 2011, 2012. I think my total tenure in large law firm was 6.5 years. I was in my 7th year of practice.
Gotcha. And tell me about a little bit, you know, the benefits of practicing in that firm. What's the story behind that?
It was great experience, great exposure. Maya alluded to this earlier. I mean, you get to serve those Fortune 500 companies, complicated issues, sophisticated issues. And so it was great training, great experience. Mm-hmm. The downside was that it was very difficult to form personal relationships because these are large institutional corporate clients. Mm-hmm. In ERISA HR department, there was sometimes high turnover. And so the HR staff would turn over every couple of years, and so it was very difficult to form personal relationships with the client. I think also the billing structure, because we billed on an hourly rate in the large law firm. I had clients that would call, and you could tell they were trying to get through the conversation as quickly as possible because they knew they were being billed for every second of that time.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And there was little flexibility in that structure. And so the pros were getting that exposure to the Fortune 500 clients.
Like a stepping stone almost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very grateful for that experience.
Now, for your practice now, you focus on ERISA law.
Yes.
So tell me a little more about ERISA law.
ERISA law, ERISA stands for the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, ERISA. And it's essentially hedged in between employment and tax law. We specifically, this body of law governs retirement plans, health and welfare benefits, some executive compensation as well. And so therein lies my areas of expertise, my areas of focus. Retirement plans, health and welfare benefits, and executive compensation. Also helping companies over the past year through the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. So like Maya, you have a focus in your small practice, but you focus more on that side. Do you have other people you refer to for the other issues that come up for your clients?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I focus on my area. I don't do anything else. I don't do employment. I don't do corporate. I refer that out. I want to be the expert in my specific area.
So you have other people that you work with, and you work with small businesses mostly, correct?
Small to mid-sized businesses. I'd say my smallest employer right now is about 10 employees, and my largest has about 600. So there's a bit of a range. Yeah. It's interesting how people define small versus mid-sized. I mean, that can range. Some people define that by revenue, some people, but generally, I would define my typical client as an employer with anywhere between 10 to several hundred employees.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do clients normally find you? Do you word of mouth, or do you advertise in some of these different areas? How do they get in touch with you or find you?
Word of mouth and doing great work for my current clients. That's my best marketing. Yep. And so making sure that the level of service is personalized. And suited for the client.
Right. And when working with these small businesses, who's like your point of contact over there? Is it someone in the HR department, or do you actually, you know, work with the head honcho over there, or who do you contact?
Generally two individuals, the CFO making the decision, the financial decision, and then the HR director, vice president of HR, who is dealing day to day with the compliance issues.
Yeah, because I'm sure you need access to a lot of the records and need real inside information, and perhaps the CEO is not really in touch with those sort of things, but the HR department may be. So
that's right.
That's very good.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and ask you how the listeners can get in touch with you, and then we'll open up to the discussion, the hot topic discussion. So go ahead.
So my website is www.hallbenefitslaw.com. I'm on Twitter.
There's so many new names. Twitter. You never know what's coming out.
I'm on Twitter at Hall Benefits Law, Facebook, Hall Benefits Law as well. Probably the best way to find my contact information is through my website.
Your website, and that's hallbenefitslaw.com.
Two L's.
Yes, Hall. That's right.
Awesome. So we're going to go ahead and everybody can pitch in. I'm going to ask a couple questions to Ann Tyler just to get the ball rolling here. So what do you enjoy most about practicing in that small law firm?
I enjoy the personal relationship with the client that I wasn't allowed. It was very difficult to formulate in a larger platform, larger law firm. The clients that we served at Alston & Burke, King & Spalding were large institutional clients, and the billable hour was such that it was very difficult to form a personal relationship. And so that's what I enjoy most about.
And I would think with a personal relationship, you can really get to know that person and really truly help them.
And find out more about their business. I mean, there are so many interesting entrepreneur, small startup companies doing very interesting things. I met a man that has built a multi-million dollar business on tents, weddings oh, wow. for Cirque du Soleil. And it's just fascinating to me. And I think that's what drives my passion is finding out what some of these small business owners, small to mid-sized companies are doing and then watching them grow.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see everybody's ideas and them living their dream. I meet with small business owners every day that are looking for, you know, a place in Atlanta to call their home for their business. And it's so interesting. I almost live with them, like what they're going through. I'm like, oh yeah, that's awesome. You know, I'm like their advocate. So do you feel that way as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. And what I tell clients is, you know, I want to help you build better business benefits so that you can attract and retain good employees and provide a good environment. If you have good business benefits, that just smooths the way for a good relationship with your employees and good business.
Right, right. It makes people proud to work there. Go ahead.
I was just going to piggyback with Ann. When you're working with a larger firm, because I've been blessed to be contracted from larger firms with some of the cases that I've been involved in, you're looking at things from a macro level because you're not you know, hands-on, meeting the client every day like the partners. You're looking at it, you know, from that bird's eye view. But when you have your own practice and private practice or smaller practice areas, you're more hands-on. You know what the case is about from front to back versus just that piece of litigation. And I think I like the experience that I've had because I was able to say, you know, I've had that large firm experience and I know how to look at from the at the bird's eye, but mm-hmm. then I also know how to be on the floor with the ground running, you know, hit the ground running.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. That experience is great.
Taking back on that, it's a great thing to really, on my end, you are not, as an associate, when I was associate, I was at a firm that had 30 people in Macon, Georgia at one point, so that's my experience, and there I was an associate, and my goal in some senses was to build the hours and do the work well. But now when you're on your own, we all have our names on our firm. Our work is not just work. It's our reputation. It's
who we
are.
The buck stops here.
Exactly. Right. And none of us will get business if we don't do a good job. So sometimes clients say, how do I know you'll do a good job? I need to do a good job so you will tell everybody about me. And so it's not just our work, but we learn our clients' stories. Mm. In my case, the way we make our cases more valuable is by learning our clients' stories. And it's not thousands of cases. We have a set mm-hmm. limited number to make sure we can put in the effort and the time to make their cases worth what is reasonable. And you can only mm-hmm. do that by learning a story and being hands-on and really being a part of their case.
How do you do that? How do you know how many cases? Like, what's the advice you give the new attorneys that are trying to come up on their own firm? I know it's probably different per law, per specialty.
Yeah. Try to be organized if you can. And pretty much, I mean, I don't know. As an attorney, we're type A for the most part. So we know what's yeah. going on. Right. And it might be under, you know, 5 sheets of paper on the floor in our office, but we know where it's at.
Right.
I always tell new lawyers. I always tell new lawyers, you know, don't take everything that walks in the
yes.
door.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes, you know, if you find a client that has fired a lot of lawyers, sometimes it's not the lawyers.
It's the
it may be that client.
What's
and what
common
you don't
denominator?
want to do is to get a bad mouthpiece. You don't want to have a client
yes.
who's going to be in the community telling everybody how horrible you were and how why they had to fire you. So I think you definitely not just have to worry about your load, but mm-hmm. you also want to make sure that the type of clients that you're going to get gel with your personality and
yes.
your business structure. So mm-hmm. if you know that this person, you know, it's very high strung and you're very laid back, maybe you'll say, hey, my personality and your personality, we won't work well together.
So mm-hmm. Maya, do you do interviews, consultation? How do you pick up on that? Because
okay.
I think that's a great point.
I do consultations first. I've never taken a client blindly. So we always talk, and because I do work with people all across the state, sometimes it's just a phone conversation. And because most of my business is referral business, I can also ask and say, okay, what is this personality like? Because there are cases that are right down my alley as far as the work that I do, but I just don't think it's a good fit. And so I say, hey, I think you'd be better suited with this particular attorney because I think that, you know, that just be a better experience for everybody involved.
It's like when, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just add on to what you said. Is somebody once told me when I started my own firm that the key is the best case decision you will make is the case you don't take, because that's what happens is, you have people who are taking a case on their belief instead of the facts. But in the end, you and your client, you're a team. It's not, I'm the attorney. I'm handling everything. You're a team with your clients, and you all need to work
like
together as a team.
Mm-hmm. And then we also always have advice on this show. A lot of the attorneys have said, you know, if you're picking a lawyer to interview 2 or 3, just like you would your doctor, mm-hmm. to make sure. So I'm hoping that people hear that today,
right.
that they, you know, see if they gel, like Maya
right.
said, with their whatever attorney, and they'll pick out of the 2 or 3 that they interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one is the one that I really work with. Like you said,
mm-hmm.
you're getting involved personally with this person,
right.
so you really want to make sure you jive.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key, because I think when you're handling a case, you really want your client to be comfortable enough to tell you the truth, because
mm-hmm.
there's nothing worse than going to court and finding out that your client has lied.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And then you're looking like the deer with the headlights.
mm-hmm.
So for a new attorney, or maybe attorney that's in a large law firm, and they know they want to do it, and they're scared to death to start on their own, what advice would you give? What's that first step that you take?
Have faith.
Doing it. Yeah, you're just taking the step. It is scary. There's a lot of unknowns, but you can't start unless you start. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that makes sense, but that's the truth.
You can't start unless you start. There's the word of the phrase of the day there.
Just to piggyback off what Michael said, you have to be confident and comfortable in who you are. Mm-hmm. I will say, my first year, I wasn't probably as comfortable walking in a radio show in my Jordans as I am, 6 years later. But you become comfortable in your skills. You become comfortable in who you are as a person. And just to kind of go back on what we were saying about the clients, when I meet with clients, I always tell them, make sure I am the fit for you and I'll do the same, because we don't take every client that walks in. We mm-hmm. have to make sure we can work well with each other. And then in addition to that, you don't want to make decisions based on I have to pay office rent, I have my own bills. Because if you're looking at what you have to take care of, you may make a decision of taking the wrong case or the wrong client or doing something unethical, which you may not even know is unethical, but you may do something that's to your detriment. So a person that may be leaving a large firm, starting their own practice, they want to keep those things in mind you start to build your practice. Mm-hmm. Just, you have to have that faith that my, lifestyle is going to be okay. Let mm-hmm. me focus on doing a good job for my clients, because I'm going to, I'm going to be okay. But mm-hmm. if you focus on your problems, you're not going to do well for your clients. You're not going to do well for your business, because you can be a great attorney and a bad business person.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Right.
There's a reputation out there for that. Sure. Really good at what they do.
Did anyone here have a mentor or someone they kind of leaned on when making that transition? And would you advise that for someone who out there may be listening, thinking about that?
I was thinking the same thing. I think one of the things sometimes that happens when you work in a large law firm, all of your networking and your colleagues are in the large law firm environment. And I think if you're thinking about going solo or transitioning to a smaller practice, you need to network and meet people who are in the smaller practice arena, because the experience and the advice is going to be very different. And so, you need mentors, and you also need mentors, because when you transition from a large law firm, you've always been looking at it as an associate, and now you got to look at it not just as practicing law, but as a business. And so you need people who can give you advice and guidance on, how do I structure my business? How do I bill? Am I going to charge people by the hour? Am I going to do some kind of arrangements? How do I make this work for everybody so that I can continue to stay in business?
And to piggyback off of what Maya said, my first year of starting my own practice was building my network, getting branding, building my network, and it didn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. And you have to plant, and mm-hmm. and those seeds will take a while to bloom.
Yes.
And so I would say that you need to be patient mm-hmm. as well, patient and persistent.
Okay. Yeah, because relationships are the most important in the community, mm-hmm. and so that takes a long time. I mean, nobody's going to be your best friend overnight.
Right. That's right.
So I mean, they'll act like it, but then nobody's going to do business with somebody they don't trust. So that relationship aspect, you've got to build that, and that takes time, for sure.
A mentor told me, just to piggyback off that, it takes at least 3 years to develop a relationship. So if you're just starting your practice today, meet people today, and remember, 3 years later, they may be your friend if you continue to plant those seeds and cultivate that and build your network. Having your own practice, you have to remember that you have resources. Smaller firms, we combine with each other, work with each other, have of counsel to create that large firm for that person. So again, it may be a great fit if you look at smaller firms versus those large firms, because mm-hmm. those resources are there.
Walking out of here today, we could start a mid-sized firm right now. What's amazing about technology and just email listservs and everything in Georgia right now, if you're thinking of going out on your own, join a listserv in your area mm-hmm. of law. When I joined my partner, being that we had a lot of cases in litigation, but I joined the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association listserv, and there's questions being asked, and I would spend my evenings reading the questions and the answers, and that way you can learn the law, and then I would see somebody who gave answers I enjoyed listening to, and I would give them a call and take them to lunch. And actually, one of my mentors lunch recently told me it takes 7 times before you form a relationship.
Yep. 7 touches.
7 touches. Mm-hmm. So if you go going to take somebody to lunch, it may take 3 years, but take them to lunch 7 times, and then you may have a relationship.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
And that seems to be a theme here today. Personal relationships, flexibility, all within the small practice, and that really blossoms you into be able to help serve your clients even more, and that's great.
What are the benefits for a client on the client side, choosing the small firm versus the large firm? Can we expand on that for a couple more minutes?
Affordability, mm-hmm. personal relationship.
Mm-hmm. Accessibility. Mm-hmm. You may be able to get your client on, I mean, your attorney on their cell phone. You may be able to get them on a personal email versus going through a secretary or a legal assistant. Mm-hmm. I have clients that I travel with, my concierge legal services. That's something that you may not get with a larger firm at times.
Exactly. Accessibility, the personal level, except for when I may have a multi-day trial or 4 or 5 day trial, I will return your call definitely by the next day, if not that evening. I have had almost yearly now, close to 6 clients a year come from other personal injury firms that you may or may not hear on the radio or TV. But why are you coming to me, and why have you left them? Because I can't get a hold of anybody.
Right.
Yeah. And there's, you know, as we are really, as attorneys, concierge, that's what I tell my clients. I'm your concierge.
That's great.
I'm going to get in touch with you. I'm going to point you in the right direction. That's my goal. And I'm available pretty much all the time.
Right. Does that mean that you really are available 24/7? Well, is that something the attorney needs to consider?
You have to be careful with that.
I get calls at 11:30 at night sometimes. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's really what Michael said. I mean, sometimes I think, and Tiffany said, you can reach somebody, but are you reaching the person that you want to talk to? Are you reaching the lawyer that you think you hired? Or you're reaching the first-year associate who mm-hmm. doesn't really have an answer to your question, but if you give them a while, they can ask the partner and call you back, or maybe you never get called back. I mean, it's just a different level of service, I think, that you'll get. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges you face going back to the attorney side, starting a new practice, monetarily wise? Like, what are some things that you know you're going to have to spend a ton of money, or what are some ways to cut costs? It's kind of a two-level question there. Mm-hmm.
Well, today, the first thing is the website. You really these days have to have a website. Mm-hmm. My first year out, when I actually had my own firm for a year and a half before I joined my partner, Randy Slater. And my first year, because I never took a business course, y'all have the business experience, but my first year was learning business. Mm-hmm. And so I took a course on that. And so I don't know how to cut costs. You have to just know that, you know, they say that first year you're going to lose money. But right. as long as you're working hard and representing your clients in time, you'll make up for it.
I think with myself having a business background, it was easier for me to look at ways to build my practice because I grew up in mom and pop businesses. So I knew, you know, some ways to cut costs is, you know, not have a high overhead. Mm-hmm. If you are just starting your practice out, I mean, you should look at office suites such as, you know,
Petrie offices.
you know, you can look at virtual offices, or you can look at partnering or sharing space with mm-hmm. other firms. Just as, you know, I'm with Slater and Walensky. For mm-hmm. me, that was a great fit because I felt as though I wanted to be around a diverse group. We're a diverse group. Mm-hmm. I am actually the female lawyer in the office, so I love being the female lawyer in the office. But I say that to say you're cutting that overhead cost because you're in a suite with another firm, mm-hmm. and they understand you. You understand them. You're not just in a building with, you know, you're in a culture where people understand what you have going on. So I think that's the biggest thing when you're starting out is keep your overhead low. If you can, you know, use discounted business cards, do that. Because at the end of the day, your business is going to be billed by word of mouth and by your work product and your skills.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I would recommend to, you know, being careful about the advertising, because I think sometimes when you start out, you know, you think, oh, I need a billboard, or oh, I mm-hmm. need a commercial, or things, you know, Avvo and all the other legal online things will start flooding you with emails trying to get you to spend money with them. And I think your best business, especially when you're first starting out, is going to be the referrals and, again, the personal relationships. And I don't think you can buy that. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely tell somebody starting out, you know, don't waste your money on a whole lot of advertising. Make your brand and make sure that your brand is consistent. And then be, you know, you have to live your brand. And as long as you do that, I think you'll be able to cut costs, at least on the marketing side, and still build your practice.
Mm-hmm. Just starting out, for attorneys that we have as clients here, they can start all the way from just the address to going all the way up to the office, but they don't have to take the office right away. You know, they could just take a little part, piece at a time, and we can work with them to cut those overheads on that as well. Any last thoughts as we close out? I think just the relationships is the biggest thing that
personal
we've heard
relationship.
Today.
And
it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Right. So if you are a young attorney or newer attorney, I have mentors that are 90 years old, literally. Mm. And I look at them in amazement and say, hey, that's where I want to be. So understand, you have to grow and allow yourself to grow.
And you don't grow just from everything you do right. You grow the most when you do things wrong, unfortunately.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that was a great, this is a great show, and I'm really excited about it, and we're going to have these guests back for sure in the future. And thank you, everybody, for listening, and stay warm and safe out there. This is Emily Rowell with Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, your host, and we'll be back next week talking about representing high-profile clients. That'll be our topic for next week. This is Emily again signing out.